first met families at one of the ICF conferences. In particular, there were some presentations with a couple of the faculty and myself, you know, great coaches in the country. I was part of an Elephant in the Room presentation in Denver, and that introduced all of us on the panel. Pat really has a long history in the coaching profession. The introductory or the announcement message gave a detailed resume. I'm not going to go over all that because it takes half our call. He's very involved in the coaching profession. He's the founder of the Life Coach Training, which is a coaching training program specifically designed, but not exclusively, to help coaches, therapists, people in the mental health profession transition into the coaching field. He's served actively within the ICF board. He's been a board member in the past. Really made a lot of contributions to make the coaching profession what it is today, and I'm really honored to have him on the call today. Is there anything else you want to say to introduce yourself? Or?
No, that's funny.
Okay. Let me give out the first half of the password. We're going to give a password out, first half now, second half at the end of the call. The first half of the password is Carl. C-A-R-L. Carl. You'll want to make note of that because I will not be repeating that again on the call. And you'll need to email me both halves of the password in order to receive your continuing education credit. This call is going to be awarded 1 hour to the ICF. You'll need to send that email to my email address, so let me get that to you now. It's Tom, T-O-M, at Crafu, my last name, K-R-A, K as in Paul, U, then the number 4, .com. That's Tom at Crafu4.com. And you can just put the full password, in the subject line, and I will be sending a CEU certificate to the email address I received that from. And it's your responsibility to save that CEU because that will be re-awarded later if you happen to lose it or something like that. So that's kind of your responsibility once you receive it. Now, I'll be getting those out, you know, certainly within a few days after I get your email. And so that's the first half of the password. And now I'd like to pass the baton on the path. I'm really looking forward to getting a talk pass. And also, those people who have the invitation to this call, there were some references in some of the documents in this area, including a couple of documents that Pat published. So maybe some of you have read that to prepare for the call. If not, I'm sure that's fine. And Pat, I'm going to let you take it over from here.
All right, great. Thanks, Tom. I really appreciate this invitation. I'm glad you keep this thing going because, as we know, coaches well engaged in the field, and even those new to the field, this question often comes up. I would say, given that if you don't know, if you didn't read the bio, I have a background as a clinical psychologist, but my training was more in humanistic and transitional psychology, so right away you can see I wasn't really interested. I'm not a typical clinician because my training being in humanistic wasn't so interested in diagnostic conditions and labeling people. But to be a truth teller, when I got into a private practice in the early 80s and through the mid 90s, of course, I was thrilled that health insurance would pay me for therapy. So we started making up diagnoses to give people to pay for insurance. And when I say making up, there was a research done by the APA that psychologists admitted that 90% of creating diagnostic categories such as KO9.28, which means adjustment disorder with mixed emotional features, to pay for those people psychotherapy. Now, you can't see the big smile on my face, but I'm like, what is that as a label? You know, adjustment disorder with mixed emotional features. So I'm kind of a sheep in a wolf's clothing, if you will, and not the other way around. I think we've over-pathologized people for the last several decades, and I was thrilled to leave my field of psychology and get into coaching. And that's not a put-down of therapy. We need to be therapists. Very clearly, there are people who need a psychotherapist, a family therapist, counselors that are well-trained when they need that sort of help. I also want you to hear that there's kind of a false distinction that's taught in many of the coaching schools. You hear people saying, well, therapy's about the past, it's don't think it's geared to a client's future as much as coaching. In other words, when you hear solution-focused coaching, that implies that there's a problem. We usually try to have our clients understand what they've got as an opportunity, they've got possibility, they've got something they want to change, but I try to keep the word problem or issue out of my vocabulary. So what I want to do is give you some of my language, some of my distinctions, and then open it up to questions, because I think I'll be able to give you learning points a lot better and a lot more customized for you if you'll do that. I think one of the links that Tom talked to you about, if not, there's articles on my website as well under resources. One I wrote in Choice Magazine, Volume 2, Issue 1, on therapy versus coaching is great to take. And you can download that, use it with my permission and their permission. Granted, they granted me that. It's reviewed with permission of Joyce now and me as well. That is really gives a clear distinction, I think, between therapy and coaching. One of the things I say that I liked at the time and still do is that coaching and psychotherapy do often look and sound similar, because many of the techniques and principles discovered in years of psychological research and application are useful in coaching. In fact, in a new issue of Choice Magazine, you're going to have an article in there called The Theoretical Foundation of Coaching. You mean this stuff is just made up? It's good for you all to know, no matter what your background, that 15, 60 years of psychological research and counseling theory actually helps coaching. And many of the techniques you may be learning in your coaching school come from that. But they're not used with a diagnosis on it. So just like, let's see, one of the other examples, like a lot of learning theory that went into education, or a lot of behavior modification theory has been applied to parenting and applied to other arenas. People can use those theories. Well, not in the field. Does that make sense to everybody? In other words, there's a wealth of information, style and research that coaching borrows from. The context of the relationship with a coaching client is much different than the context of the relationship with a client who comes for mental health counseling. What they say or hear may look similar, but if the client thinks they need therapy, that is what they're getting, even if the therapist uses coaching skills. Clients come to a coach for coaching, and that is what they should be getting, and the coach should not be providing psychotherapy or treatment for mental disorders. Is that clear to everybody?
Yes.
And the gray area is wonderfully developed by Tom and Lynn Meinstein's life research maybe a few years ago. It's on the ICF website, I'm sure Tom has made it available, is the top 10 list for coaches knowing when to refer to therapists. You know, if you ever feel in your gut that something doesn't feel right or there's something going on in this relationship, trust your gut. You should consult with your coach. You should consult with a therapist you know who's involved in coaching. I really recommend that every active coach not only have a coach that they can consult with, but hopefully a licensed therapist that they can consult with so that they can kind of speak out loud about what their gut is telling them, and maybe find out, is it just you, or does the client need to be referred, or do you need to have a conversation about what they're sensing to clear that up? I'll probably be able to give you some specific examples of questions about that. So the bottom line for me is that everyone is probably coachable until proven otherwise. Now, there are many people who won't ever reach your office or your contact number for coaching. Tends to be the people that see coaching tend today, at least, to be a little self-screened. They know that coaches, 99% of the time, they should know that coaches aren't the profession that helps with mental health problems, either severe depression or divorce or eating disorders, et cetera, et cetera. The people that know they need a therapist usually don't seek coaching. That being said, there's going to be times where you might be the best resource to refer a coaching client for therapy when they need it. And I had many clients who were grateful for me to normalize the need for seeing a counselor or normalize the benefits of seeing a counselor while they continued to come with me, or even while we put coaching on hold and they went to seek counseling for something that was going on in their life that demanded that service. context of how a client comes to see you is the key. And some of the distinctions that I make, and these are the extremes, because there's a gray area sometimes here. But generally speaking, therapy, by definition, psychotherapy therapy is for healing. When you get into the field of counseling, or you get into the field of social work practice, people make say they provide services and don't use the word therapy. Generally, therapy is an identifiable dysfunction or disorder in a person, especially if somebody is billing insurance or giving you a bill with a diagnosis on it. By definition, then that is medical treatment. Therapy deals most with a person's past and some trauma that they seek healing from. And that's traditionally what a person comes for, getting to functional, but moving beyond something that crippled their life to a minor or major degree, and they seek to get to, I don't want to use the word normalcy, but healthy functioning. It helps patients resolve old pain where they may be stuck. It's a therapist-patient relationship or a therapist-client relationship, so it tends to presume, even if I as a therapist didn't want this role, it tends to be the expert role. It also makes an assumption that emotions are a system of something, actually you already thought there's something wrong, I would rephrase that to say something needing expression. Therapist diagnosis then provides professional expertise and guidelines to provide a path to healing. Progress may sometimes be slow and painful. Those are descriptions of traditional, over to the far left side of a continuum, if you will, of therapy. Now in the middle would be solution-oriented approaches, where somebody really doesn't tell their story about their past. Solution-oriented therapists want to hear, so what's been going on and what would you like to be different? And they may even avoid diagnosis altogether. That's the kind of therapist I was for many years. Coaching has arisen in the last decade and a half, I think, because it fits a need that other professions weren't filling. And I think the main need that I'm going to fill is the shortage of listening in our society. The shortage of soulful listening. It's more than a chat, and it's not with somebody who's working with you, married to you, living with you, related to you, or whatever, which affects you in this relationship. And from that listening comes the opportunity for a healthy client, a relatively healthy client, who seeks a better situation. Better work life balance, less stress. Between stress is with everybody, so that's not a diagnostic category. It deals mostly with a person's presence that seeks to help them design a more desirable future. So in our school and in many of the others we teach, it's important to know a little bit about the client's past and not to be off-putting about hearing it. But we really teach our coaches to ask their clients to give them the Cliff Notes version. Or in our welcome packet we have for a life story. You may get more if the person wants to share it, but it's not where you put the energy of the coaching conversation. Coaching also helps clients learn new skills and tools to build a more satisfying and successful future. It's more of a co-creating, egalitarian partnership, and the coach and the client work together to help the client discover their own answers or new possibilities that come from the magic of the conversation. Coach is the expert on coaching, but you're not the expert on the client's life. Coaching also assumes that emotions are natural and normalized. The coach stands with the client and helps him or her to identify their challenges, partners them with turning those into victories and new ways of being, and holding them accountable to reach desired goals. In coaching, growth and progress are usually rapid and usually enjoyable. I worked for a while in what Coach U training had me call, I'm going to forget the term now. Tom, what's the term for people that have had a little bit of problems and like to restore it? You know, Thomas Linger called those restoratives. I found that was too much like therapy for me. Like somebody who just got done with therapy or still has a little bit of edge there. I want to work with people who are up to big things, who might have some blocks, but yes, they're motivated, they're willing to move, and they'll move quickly. And that's just my choice today. So that's a little bit about what I think the distinction is. And I think what's most important today in coaching and coach training is that we not make false distinctions, that we understand that there's a continuum, and that you get very clear on the same coaching frame. I wrote another article on dealing with trauma with coaching clients. So, since people, coaches think, oh, my client cried, I need to refer him to a therapist. No, not at all. Emotions are very normal. Even though there's a couple emotions we don't like to feel as often as others, emotions are just energy in motion. That's what emotion to me means. So, emotions can still be part of a coaching conversation if the client gets stuck in them, or if they're so emotional that it's debilitating, it takes the focus of the coaching session, then I think you need to change the conversation. So, that's probably enough said at this point. I'd rather you guys get exactly what you want and ask the questions you want, and that'll help me a lot more of what's stuck in my brain than you want to hear. Got a question or a comment at this point?
This is Jonathan Sibley. Hi. A comment and a question. First, I'm really glad to hear you today and reassured that you're talking about a continuum versus some kind of false dichotomy.
Yes.
I think that's great. And secondly, I'm wondering about in psychology research, sometimes to distinguish between what people think they're doing and talk about when they talk about what they do and what they actually do in session. And I found that there's often more commonalities in what actually happens in the rooms than when people talk about CBT or psychodynamics. And I'm wondering, if you look at what actually happens in the discussion, how do you think that compares in coaching and therapy compared to sort of theoretical phrase and the way we talk about it?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know that specific research. I know of it. I think the way I would answer that for you is there's over 1,100 identified modalities of therapy. So it's going to depend on what type of therapy a person might be receiving. But I'll say this, and this does apply to coaching. I don't think there's any research to prove this yet, but I intuitively know it's true. There's been dozens and dozens of research studies done with psychotherapy that illuminate that it is the relationship that causes the most change with the client, not the style and the theoretical foundation of the therapy. So whether it's ABT or client-centered or XYZ, the relationship between the client and the therapist is the most important reason for causing change. So I think in coaching conversations with a phone or in person, that's going to be the key. The competency that we call what is EFF is present. It's coaching presence. I think authenticity and really staying in a coaching frame so that the client becomes introspective, so that they shift their perception about things, so that they see choices weren't available to them before, so that they feel more empowered. In that way, I think they're similar. But the reason the client comes is quite different.
Yeah.
That answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, Patrick?
Yes, I've got a couple of questions. One is around emotional intelligence and working with emotions and coaching more emotional intelligence, particularly for leaders and corporations that need to make out scientific or technical background. They need to develop that blind spot. Could you address that from a coaching perspective?
Absolutely. I'm smiling. I mean, we've added that to our school. We have leadership coach training and teaching a lot of corporate people coaching who don't want to become coaches. But I am so thrilled that emotional intelligence came upon the scene because years ago, you know, when I had my training in humanistic psychology and all the soft sorts of approaches, corporate America didn't care much for me. But now that you call it emotional intelligence, you can talk about things like feelings and relationships and happiness. So I'm so thrilled that we ended up having some scientific backing to something that to me was common sense. I think
divide a person into his or her work behavior, own behavior, and to thinking and working projects as opposed to relating and work feelings and, you know, the whole concept of positive and negative stress coming from that. You can talk about things like happiness and cooperation and communication and collaborative. It gives people something that they can say, oh, these are important skills for leaders. I think that's super. Thank you. It's also very big right now, so jump on it. If I may, I'd like to throw another question out and ask you to kind of look into your crystal ball. There's many schools. I think Anthony Grant has started the first coaching psychology program that seems to be proliferating around in this country and in Great Britain. What do you anticipate in terms of this whole mix between coaching and therapy and as coaching starts to become part of coaching psychology curriculum? Well, I'll draw you to two resources on that. Actually, I looked in my crystal ball in 2001, and when my first book came out in 2002, which was Therapist as Life Coach, Transforming Your Practice, Dr. Davis and I, who co-wrote that, predicted that the next phase would be lots and lots of colleges giving degrees and certificates in coaching. At the time that book came out, there were two. I wrote an article about 6 months ago, I think, for Choice Magazine on the increase of college programs, and there's now over 50 identified graduate schools offering at least a course in coaching. Most of them are certificates in coaching, and about a half dozen offering a graduate degree in coaching. I think it's a good thing. There's a little bit of rub going on between the colleges that are out there wanting to create their own credentialing and their own sorts of curriculum guidelines, because they've already got all that through their state requires. But there's many of them, and I'm the faculty of Fielding University, who are doing their degree in line with ICF credentials. So that way, a person who gets the degree will also qualify for ACC. I think that's the best way. At the bottom line of the good news is there's going to be a lot of great research, a lot of good academic research, a lot of good inquiry that comes out of what's the difference between a full degree in coaching and a coach training organism like mine. And I think the simplest distinction is that you're going to get underpinnings and theoretical groundwork, and you're going to get courses on human change and diversity. I mean, all the psychology, all the other things you would get as a groundwork for any human service degree. Those that go to coaching training will probably be the ones that already had some sort of professional background and don't need, you know, psychology 101. Well, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. There may be some lines that are drawn in the sand a little bit. I'm having a conference. I had a vision for a conference that I got the ICF to back, and in Vancouver in August, we're having a special invitation only of 50 people that we've identified around the world. We've already got 14 countries represented in this. But we're going to talk about the future of coaching, and many of those colleges will be represented there. Here's the last thing I'd say is this. You can tell by Tom's description to me that when he calls me Pioneer, that means I've been around long enough to have gray hairs and be in this profession from the ground up. That also is true. I mean, I got my license in psychology in 1980, my doctorate in federal physics, so nuclear physics has changed since then. But what I noticed was, in my graduate school at the time, family therapy and continuous care and names like that were hardly mentioned. But I went to Esalen Institute many times in the late 60s and early 70s as part of the human potential movement. There was around Pearl doing gestalt therapy, and there was Virginia here and family therapy curve work. It wasn't yet a graduate program. There weren't yet schools of gestalt. There weren't yet schools of family therapy. They had private institutes, private clinics, training schools. And it got adapted in college. Then it became a degree. American Family Therapy as a degree is only a few decades old. So I think that's what's going to happen with coaching.
This is Andrew Duffkind.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi. I have a question related to all of that regarding positive psychology.
Okay.
How do you see, for instance, the program at the University of Pennsylvania, the Martin Seligman program?
kind of took some of positive psychology to the coaching world, you know, I know it had some mixed reviews. I was like, well, this is great stuff, but it's not coaching. And it's great research. I've come to embrace positive psychology in the last 2 years, but admittedly, when it first came out, I went, positive psychology, does that mean everything else is negative? And keep in mind, I was trained in humanistic psychology. So I kept wondering, why do we need something called positive? That's what humanistic psychology was. No matter what you call it, it's bringing great research about strength-based, that's what we're calling the class at our school, is strength-based approach to coaching. And I think there's many theoretical tools that weave together, like appreciative inquiry, if you haven't heard about that, positive psychology, what they call interview, motivational interview. There's many things that were coach-like or add credibility to coaching, and I think Marty's program is a very popular one. He's a big influencer. I'm happy to see it out there. Many of the coaching schools, by the way, I'm also on the board of directors of the Association of Coach Training Organizations. There's at least three of us now that have a course in positive psychology and coaching. Anybody else?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Much better coach than I was when I coached executives.
couldn't diagnose them. It was executive coaching. But now, much better. Much better.
So, I have a follow-up question to that. I have a challenge. I don't like to say that I am a coach because of the whole diagnostic stuff and having confidence, you know, therapist background. And that in terms of attracting clients, what I'm thinking is talking more about being a right brain coach. And you know, to me, it's not quite there, but it really is helpful, you know, what me, ADHD, or people with ADHD, quote unquote, diagnosis, or have that personality, or whatever you want to put on it. Almost everyone that I've met are right brain, very kinesthetic, and very visual. So those are the things that are my expertise when, you know, I look at that and I look for ways to help my clients develop.
Right. So I think you're hitting on something, and I think everybody could hear this depending upon how you want to have your niche find you or attract the right, your ideal client. I would assume that that's too consider, and there's no right or wrong to this. But what if the way you describe what you do was that you work with executive leaders and business people who often find themselves distracted, over-focused, and I'm just making this up. Because a lot of leaders, CEOs, and even psychologists have many of the characteristics of ADD, whether or not you want to diagnose them or not. So then the next stage would be some of my clients might have diagnoses of ADD, or they might have found themselves in learning disordered or whatever. So I work on a strength-based approach to having their life become, you know, whatever. Amanda,
I love it.
Yeah.
I
describe
it.
The benefit
what
you do to typical problems that might attract you. And you may become known as, oh, she's an ADD coach by some circle, but you may be getting better because known as someone who works with executives who finds themselves, and I'm laughing at myself and my wife are listening right now, she's pointing to me, who find themselves easily distracted, having too many things on their plate at once, absent-minded professor, you know, free spirit, left brain, you know, I mean, right, that sort of thing. So.
Great, thank you very much.
Anybody else?
This is Jonathan speaking again. I just wanted to follow up on the coaching psychology question. Because I think another piece of that is that at least in the UK and Australia, there are programs that are really focusing on the convergence of psychology and coaching.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is your thought on that? I don't think that's quite happening in the US yet.
Well, it's starting to. I mean, I was thrilled when you first created that program, and we've stayed in great contact. I'm also the chair of International University of Professional Studies, which is a non-traditional mentor-based platform for coaching. And there's others, University of Texas, George Washington, Georgetown. They tend to be in the organizational development department, whereas for business school, whereas Tony's was coaching psychology. He still stands out there as pretty Oxford Brooks and England, I think, is in the psychology department or something like that. And my personal view is all of them need to have the underpinnings of adult learning and psychological research and organizational development behavior. Those sorts of theories are what came before coaching. So if there's somebody strongly including those, but not, you know, what we don't want is schools that turn out people with a degree and they're really consulting, or they're really trainers. Coaching is a unique program.
But do you think that there will be differentiation down the road where it is an advantage to have some sort of behavioral science background, you know, where that will be a plus?
I don't really think so. I think the only way that's an advantage is just to start from round one. Corporate America is getting more and more interested in what certification you have, not what your degree is in. Now, typically, they have higher doctoral degrees. And I will say this, having just come back.
next up is the European conference. Doctoral degrees and graduate degrees outside of the U.S. are highly revered. And they open a lot of doors. So it's not a bad thing to, you know, if you have a doctoral degree, you're in 3% of the population. But is it required? No. IBM, Marriott, get the other Sun Micro, I think. When they hire coaches now for their managers and leaders, the first criteria is that they're ICS certified. So that's a trend I think is very positive.
Hi, this is Sharon Bendix from Texas. Hi, Pat. I find this really useful to me. It's a confirmation in many ways, at least what's happening in Texas at times, particularly what's happening at UC Dallas and so forth. But I'm beginning to see, particularly in the health field, that they're getting in the wellness industry also within Texas. There is a language that's being learned now. There's a hint in that direction that they're not surprised when I show up. They'll say, oh, a coach, okay. They know about ICF. There's just hints here and there. Even companies and corporations that have wellness programs are beginning to engage in conversation with coaches to integrate it into their wellness programs.
And there's going to be more and more of that. A conference, if any of you have a wellness bent, I would recommend that you consider doing the National Wellness Institute Conference in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, mid-July. NWI.org. I'm doing four presentations there, and there's about 12 presentations there this year on coaching, and 4 years ago there was one. So it's out there. I've got an article coming out in Personal Fitness Magazine on coach training for personal trainers. You know, they're trying to at least get that if they don't want to become a coach, if they're going to add coaching to what they do, they got to at least learn ICF competencies and proper paradigms of coaching strategies.
You know, something with this to Sharon again about that is there is beginning to be a little bit of an understanding about what coaching is in terms of being non-clinical. And they're starting to create pockets where they deem their patients coming out of a post-diagnostic position or state, creating the term healthy population to maintain lasting behavioral changes.
Yeah.
And I'm really pleasantly hopeful.
Wouldn't it be great if our national Department of Health actually was a Department of Health instead of a Department of Fitness? But that was just another point. Don't get me started on that.
Private franchises that I've been in contact with who are beginning to do this. So they'll be private pioneering as they take place.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic about the way coaching has. I mean, it's a good thing that the ICF now has 10,500 members in 121 countries or whatever it is. It has influenced other fields to take notes. What we all have to be vigilant about is making sure that the label doesn't get diluted in what a coach is and what they're not. You know, it's happened in therapy. I mean, anybody can call themselves a counselor for a while. Anybody can call themselves a therapist until licensing came to be. We're trying to avoid licensing and coaching, but still have standards that are recognized.
That's a little difficult, too, because it's still when I have contracts with certain people or alliances, a nutritionist has come in, like just recently, and decided to just move on. That this nutritionist decided to switch her title to being a nutrition coach. And she has no training in coaching.
Well, it'll happen for a long time. And it's like financial planner versus certified financial planner. Maybe someday the public will know the
difference. Tom Crawford.
Yeah.
I wanted to turn everyone's attention and see if anyone out there has a question that looks more to the distinction between coaching therapy. The conversation has moved more towards the future of coaching. And if we need to talk about that more, I don't want to deter that, but if there's somebody out there with a question more related to the distinction here between coaching and therapy, I'd like you to step forward.
My name is Michelle. I'm from Dallas. And I have a question regarding the distinction between coaching and employee assistance services.
Okay.
What I see now is a lot of PhDs has been more assessment and referral to community resources, and it's been a short term.
Right.
How do you
know
about that?
Well, I'm going to have a very biased opinion because we have three coaching specialists at our school. If I were to develop EAP today, I'd call it employee assistance coaching.
Okay.
EAPs are evolving. They're also struggling to maintain that old way of being. They are no longer necessary for to do management consultation. Many of them are adding coaching, not just starting to call themselves coaches, but adding a coaching component, which I think is a great thing. And, you know, we've trained over 150 EAP counselors and professionals in my specialty certificate last year, presenting at the EAP conference in Philadelphia in the fall. So it's a good thing, but again, it needs proper training as opposed to just starting to use.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's my only, you know, bugaboo is they don't just start calling it coaching and have it still be consulting. Mm-hmm. They're not going to take our clients, I'll tell you that, because they're already in the company and they're still going to be short term. It's still going to be limited to 5 to 10 sessions like the EAP model provides. But we are finding companies, I won't name them, but companies that come through us finding this. Adding the coaching component is very, very powerful in their workplace. And then the research shows that they've got happier employees, less turnover, less absenteeism, and affect the bottom line.
This is Sharon. I was just thinking about the distinction between coaching and psychology, and that I just recently found out the American Counseling Association offers a professional liability insurance for life coaches along with their membership. And you don't even have to be licensed as a counselor. So that is a fairly new thing, I think.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I found out actually through one of your instructors when I was taking a training course in law.
I know that the ACA, NASW, all the 50 fields, even the American Psychological Association, recognize under my license that coaching is covered under my insurance, but I still need to be a licensed therapist. It's just an additional service, so I don't know.
Right, they actually say either or.
So, in the time we have left, anybody got for your stuff, a place where you're confused, or you disagreed with what I said, or questions? Yes. Hello?
Hi, this is Tori Stone, Santa Barbara.
Hello.
I'm interested in, if you think of me, if people want a three-line definition, of the things between coaching and psychotherapy, can you give this real quick second spot?
My definition in my book is that it's a powerful human relationship where trained coaches assist people to design their future rather than get over their past. But it's not meant to, you have to read the rest of it about that. I look at the ICF definition. I make sure that you get a clear definition from the ICF that you can describe what is professional coaching versus what is a coach approach that people can learn in a conversation. So coaching is a co-creation partnership where a trained coach assists the client to design any and all areas of their life to run more smoothly and satisfactorily. I probably can't repeat that, but
thank you very much.
Yeah.
I also have a question.
Okay.
Hi, Karen. I'm intrigued by what you said about how you learned so much more and became so much better at what you were doing after you had coach training.
Yes.
And have you written about that? Do you have an article or a piece, or is that part of your book, or can you elaborate a little bit more?
Well, actually, I just turned in a manuscript. We're taking the foundational course manual of our institute that will be a published book next January called Lessons from the Institute of Life Coach Training for Human Relations. And so the introduction to that book, I really tackled that topic. I haven't said more about that in the article coming out in Choice, but I think, well, I might have, actually. I think just like as a therapist, every time I took new training, I got a new perspective. It's like keeping your saw sharp and keep your skills sharp. The coaching skills that come out.
what you said, but it's been addressed.
Yeah. What is your website?
LifeCoachTraining.com. And just so you all know, I mean, even in that, life coaching to me, if you're coaching a breathing human being, it's all life coaching. So I do know that if you have life coach on your card and you want to contract with your doctor, you probably won't get it. So life coaching is the operating system that we teach that all coaching utilizes. It's a whole person, non-direct, client-centered approach to coaching.
Anyone have any more questions for Pat? Pat, can you stick around for a few minutes or call over in case there's some more conversation they want to have?
Yeah, for a few.
Okay. What I'd like to do is pause for a minute to just get half of the password, since we're getting pretty close to the hour, and to discuss how to get a continuing education credit, 1 hour for this call. And then maybe Pat can entertain if there's a few more questions or some more comments people want to share. We'll stay on for a little bit longer. So in order to get that continuing education credit, you need to send the full password to my email address. I'll repeat that. My email address is Tom, T-O-N, at Kropa, so K-R-A, T as in Paul, U, and then the number 4.com. Also, if you're interested in CEUs, if you're interested in being put on the reminder email list to be an announcement for our September call and future calls, just to drop me an email, I'll put you on that list as well. If you ever want to be removed from that list, just put me on, I'll take it off. Now, the second half of the password is Jung, J-U-N-G. Jung, J-U-N-G. That's the second half of the password. And again, send that to my email address at tom@kropa4.com. I want to thank everyone who came to the call here. And for those of you who want to hang out for a few more minutes, maybe we can talk for a few minutes. And remember, next September's call is going to be on relationship coaching and finishing that from therapy. So anybody else have any comments or things they want to share with Pat or questions you want to ask?
I have another question for Pat. This is Bill from Sydney. Pat, it sounds like you're being very influential on different committees you're on. Do you feel like you're able to be an influence in making sure that coaching doesn't feel like it has to reinvent everything and that where appropriate we can take research from the field such as psychology?
Well, yeah, me and many others. I mean, I think now that research has become an important conversation at coaching conferences, they're seeing that coaching is a trans-theoretical model that is borrowed from a lot that's gone before. And that's okay, and we're developing our own research. So as my good friend Irene Stein said, we're getting to the point where there's a field of coaching, not just a body of coaches. And the field will be that we'll have research and data and concepts and techniques and strategies that come specifically from coaching research. But in the meantime, it's fine to borrow from what went before because psychology borrowed from philosophy.
So you're not seeing a lot of resistance to borrowing from
coaching. We're actually picking up very positive. People know that for the profession to be recognized strongly, it needs to have theoretical soundness. It needs to have principles that can be backed up. We're even having research being done on the 11 core competencies. Are they really core competencies or not?
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be research to help with all of that. And that's what happens with every growing profession.
Sure. Anybody else?
Is there some way, a clearinghouse, or a place to say
Thank you.